Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome to Today's Issues. It is Tuesday, January 29th, and it is cold in much of the country. Fred Jackson, news director for American Family News and One News Now. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning. I didn't have to wade through snow or ice to get here today. Mighty thankful.
Yes, mighty thankful.
It was, mighty thankful.
Around here, Walker Wildman, also AFA Vice President of Operations. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning. Good to be here today.
Yeah, well, Walker likes cold weather because he's a deer hunter.
That's right.
Well, but deer season's over, isn't it? Isn't it over?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow. So if we lose Walker's voice halfway through the program,
it's because I've gone hunting. You know, this year hasn't been a good year for me. My brother killed two big bucks on the same day.
Uh-huh. On the same day?
On the same day within 30 minutes of each other, and I haven't killed one yet.
Well, what was he, dragging one out of the woods?
And he then shot another one and then text me bragging about it, and then he just sat in his stand. And 30 minutes later, I heard him shoot again, and he got a bigger one than the first one. So
I'd rub it in there.
Huh? Yeah, and I've been trying so hard. It rains every weekend. I've got hard feelings, so we'll see how next year goes.
So are you taking off this afternoon?
I'm done. Well, no. I'm done hunting this year.
Okay. All right.
You know, there's a point where you just have to just call it quits.
Yeah,
and wait till next happen. Year. Yeah, it's I'm just not gonna have my day.
Wait till next year.
Yeah,
that's what you're saying. Well, anyway, so we here where our flagship station is. You know, we have 183 radio stations in the AFR network. The flagship station where everything comes out of is here in Tupelo, Mississippi, and they were predicting some, you know, possible snow flurries and maybe some ice, and nothing really materialized. At least here where we are, a little bit south of us, got some, but it is cold across much of the nation. I don't know whether this falls into the category of the polar vortex. Remember a couple of years ago, that was what everyone was saying. It's a polar vortex, and all that cold weather came down. Who knows? But it's cold in the Midwest especially.
And, of course, we have a president who loves to tweet, and he decided to jump into the weather.
No.
In the last 24 hours, basically saying, bring on the global warming. We could use some here.
A lot of people buy that, that's for sure.
I tell you what.
So, all right, Fred, what do we got on the news front?
Let's start off with some really good news today. And the good news, believe it or not, comes out of Islamabad, Pakistan. And there today, Pakistan's top court upheld its acquittal of Asiya Bibi. She is the Christian lady. She has been basically in prison for almost 10 years.
Right.
Because of an alleged charge of alleged blasphemy against Islam. And it had to do with giving a cup of water to some ladies, and she allegedly disparaged Muhammad, and she's been in the court system in prison ever since.
This is let me just interrupt real quickly here. This is kind of the trap that a lot of Christians, one of the pitfalls, a lot of Christians in these Muslim countries have to avoid.
Yeah.
She offered a cup of water to some Muslim women. They said, we can't, you're an infidel, we can't touch it. And then apparently they started grilling her, and they said, you need to convert to Islam. And she said, well, I'm not, I'm a Christian. And apparently the conversation, you know, worked around to, so you don't believe that the Prophet Muhammad is the true prophet. And of course, faithful Christians, she said no, and they accused her of blasphemy. It is a very, very difficult thing. You talk about thin ice. These Christians, I'm just encouraging our listeners to be praying for them. They live under that threat every day of their lives. So she was on this flimsy charge, has been in prison, facing the death penalty.
Yes.
For almost 10 years.
Yeah. And several weeks ago, the court found her not guilty. And then the radical Islamists in Pakistan went absolutely ballistic. They still wanted to kill her, and they've threatened the members of the court even soon. So there's been high security, riot police, again, were out today. Very interesting what Pakistan's Chief Justice, Asif Saeed Khan Khosa, who led the panel of judges that dismissed the petition, asking the court to review its October 31st acquittal of Bibi. He said in court, now, this is a brave man. This is what he said in open court, that Beebe's accusers were guilty of perjury, and if the case had not been so sensitive, they should have been jailed for life.
Wow.
Now, that's what the Chief Justice, what we would call the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, that's what he said in open court. And then he said this, the image of Islam we are showing to the world gives me much grief and sorrow. Now, so there you have it. Those are very brave words coming from this man. And I'm sure he'll have lots of security around him. But he's exactly right. This is the image of Islam that many are seeing in the West. And is it any wonder when people say that Islam is a religion of peace? Oh, no, it isn't. And particularly in Pakistan.
Well, and Walker, you know, one of the things we say, I've said, I'll just say that on this show, is where are the moderate Muslims?
Right.
Because of these images in Pakistan of these radicals threatening, and the fact that the highest court in the land has to have security against these people. This is a brave man, and he's saying, listen, this is not what we want people to see of Islam. Mm-hmm. And good for him, tip of the hat to this guy, and we need to see more of that here in the West.
Yeah, and you know, the media, oftentimes when we have a jihadi, an Islamic terrorist attack, or you know, we have this going on over there in Pakistan, they always say, well, you know, the vast majority of Muslims are peaceful and loving, and that may be true, but I never hear from them.
Right.
You know, there may, I think there's one imam in the U.S. who, he's a Muslim, that goes on Fox and other places and actually talks out against stuff like this, but he's the only one.
Right.
You know, he's the only one. So I don't know whether the vast majority of Muslims sympathize with stuff like this, or they're just afraid to speak out because they don't want to be targeted like a Sia Beebe.
And that's a real danger. I liken it to, you know, maybe living in New York in the 1950s when you had a mob hit and the police come and say, "Did you see anything?" Everybody, I didn't see anything.
Yeah.
And then people don't want to be the next one dead. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably some of the pressure for the moderate Muslims is, well, we don't want to get our head cut off either.
Yeah.
So.
Now, let us be very careful. Sia Beebe is not out of the country of Pakistan yet.
Right.
She has been held in a secret location now for 2 or 3 months almost since the initial court decision acquitting her. The intent is to get her out of the country as quickly as possible. Her plan is to join her two daughters who earlier fled to Canada. So that apparently is where
she's. What about her husband? Is he out of the country? Or?
I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure about that. But so it's great, this decision today, upholding the earlier decision. We're thankful for that. But she is not out of the country yet. So her life is still in danger, folks.
Right. Well, we so folks, pray for Sia Beebe. Pray for her husband. I think he was. I thought last I heard that he might still be in the country, and that means he's in danger. But please, folks, if you're a Christian, remember on a daily basis your brothers and sisters around the world. Pray for their safety and pray for I don't know how to say, revival or what in some of these countries, because many of these probably wouldn't be revival as we think about it in this country with stadiums and preaching. But Christianity is growing strong, for example, in places like Iran. And so, but pray for Christians who live under intense persecution and threat every day of their lives. Must be a terrible amount of pressure, but they seem to joyfully continue to follow the Lord. So we need to rejoice in this decision. Could have gone against her.
Yes.
She could have been executed, and pray for her escape to rejoin her family.
Well, let's move on to our next story back closer to home here. And there's just too many stories like this that's happening. We have had another incident involving police officers being wounded in a shootout, this one in Houston, Texas, yesterday. And the president of the Houston Police Officers Union, there's five officers, they were injured in this shooting, none of them killed, thankfully, in this case, but we need to remember them in our prayers. But Joe Gamaldi, he is the president of the Houston Police Officers Union. And he held a news conference, I believe it was last evening. And I want you to have a listen to what he has to say. Police officers, folks, in this country have a target on their back, and I'm just about quoting what Joe Grimaldi had to say at this news conference last night. Cut 10.
But now I want to speak on behalf of the 5,200 brave men and women of the Houston Police Department and the other 800,000 police officers that are working these streets every single day, putting their lives on the line. We are sick and tired of having targets on our back. We are sick and tired of having dirt bags trying to take our lives when all we're trying to do is protect this community and protect our families. Enough is enough. And if you're the ones that are out there spreading the rhetoric that police officers are the enemy, well, just know we've all got your number now. We're going to be keeping track of all of y'all, and we're going to make sure that we hold you accountable every time you stir the pot on our police officers. We've had enough, folks. We're out there doing our jobs every day, putting our lives on the line for our families. Enough is enough.
So there you have it. You can hear the emotion in his voice. Now, I'm not sure whether he was directing those last comments to reporters who were there. This was a news conference, I assume, at the police station or at the union headquarters. But you can hear the frustration. And as I say, this story is just happening almost on twice a week now, where we have police officers being gunned down, killed many times, or wounded. And honestly, guys, I think this goes back to the Eric Holder days. When he was Attorney General of the United States and under the administration of Barack Obama, I believe police were put under the gun. Anytime there was a shooting, whether it was Ferguson or Baltimore, whatever the case, instantly the knee-jerk reaction is police did something wrong.
Right.
And it has carried over. The mainstream media has continued the narrative of Eric Holder and Barack Obama against police in this country. The mainstream media, it's got to be the police officers are bad. They're the ones who are bad. And I'm not saying that there aren't bad cops. There are some bad cops. But what has happened is that there is this general story out there now that suspect cops, anytime there's an incident, you have a right to say the cops were wrong in this. So they're guilty until proven innocent.
Right.
And that's just not right.
Well, you know, Walker, there's an advancement of a narrative on the part of the left.
Right.
And, I mean, it's across the board. I mean, you look at the, of course, the Ferguson example your dad points out frequently. Mm-hmm. To Fred's point, that the Justice Department, Eric Holder, they sent like 45 FBI agents?
Yeah.
To this little small community to try to root out the racism, the latent racism and blatant discrimination that was going on there. And they found nothing, but of course destroyed Darren Wilson's life, but advanced the narrative. You have Colin Kaepernick and some of those NFL players. The narrative is that cops, you should always be suspicious of cops. Generally speaking, they are racist. And that if you're black, you need to watch your back. Now, to Fred's point, we don't want to deny. I remember one of the videos I saw with this cop, I think it was in South Carolina, shooting a black man in the back half a dozen times.
Mm-hmm.
That guy should be buried under the prison. I mean, right. Those kinds of people, you're going
to
have.
And he did go to jail.
And he did go to jail.
Right.
You're going to have bad apples in every occupation.
Right.
There are teachers every time you turn around. It seems like there's some woman teacher that's had relations with a teenage boy.
Mm-hmm.
You don't advance the narrative that all teachers are sexual predators.
Right.
Because of it, you deal with the ones who commit crimes, and then you respect those who teach or who are firefighters or who protect us on the streets. The truth is the truth.
Yeah.
Most of these men and women are good people.
Yeah, this problem is going on multiple fronts. So you have the Obama and Eric Holder war on cops is what some have called it, and that is they investigated and went after law enforcement agencies even though there was no wrongdoing to begin an investigation, such as Darren Wilson, I believe is his name, who shot Michael Brown. He ended up being exonerated, but he was exonerated after dozens of FBI agents went and interviewed every agent at that department and spent weeks and months there. So what Obama's administration did is gave a license to lawbreakers to not like the cops and to disrespect the cops. And it also goes down to the breakdown of the family, of the traditional biblical family, because there's no respect for authority, whether it be your teacher, principal, or police officer. There's no respect for anybody of authority. And so this is all a part of a bigger problem, and the only way it's going to be fixed is if we restore respect for authority.
Here's the danger, I think, in all of this, and probably it's already happening. You have people who thought about a career in law enforcement,
right.
And I'm sure they're now thinking, why would I want to do that? Number one, it's a dangerous job.
Mm-hmm.
But number two, the public doesn't have my back anymore. In fact, I'm guilty until proven innocent.
Right.
And there's real danger in that. There's danger to the public because cops are going out there now and they're having second thoughts before they pull the gun out of their holster.
Right.
Endangering their own lives, and we've seen the videos of that even lately, where a cop will make a traffic stop on somebody, and the guy ends up shooting the cop as he walks up to the car. So they're hesitant. They've got the cameras in the car now. They've got camera. Thank God for that. I think that's one of the good things that's come out of this.
Yeah,
because it helps to show who's lying and who's not.
Right.
In all of this, but I fear for police departments in this country, because of the narrative that's out there right now, you're under suspicion right away.
Yeah.
Anytime there is a question about force being used, up to and including having to draw a gun.
Yeah, and you have all of that we're talking about. Then you have people like Senator Kamala Harris, who is saying that capital punishment is off the table no matter what.
Mm.
You can kill as many cops as you want, and you will, at worst, you'll have life in prison. There will be no capital punishment, no death penalty. That's what she said, no matter what the crime is.
Well, and again, Fred, your point is well taken, too. And that is that if it wasn't for the cameras that police officers wear or that are on their dashboards, there was that case several years back where a woman was out jogging. She was a black woman in a nice neighborhood. The police stopped and were talking to her. She claimed that they were discriminating against her because she was in a good neighborhood. And what the audio and video showed was that they were talking to her about being careful. She was running with headphones in, and they were simply cautioning her about endangering her life as she's running and not being able to hear cars. And that accusation against them might have stuck if they did not have the video and audio proof that she had lied.
Yeah.
So those kind of things, police are having to adopt these kinds of technologies to protect themselves as well as to help catch bad guys. So.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Next story. I've really come to appreciate a group that's known as Campus Reform. Now, they are a group of fairly conservative young people who keep drawing attention to the liberalism on our university campuses, and even to the point I would call it kind of left-wing indoctrination that's occurring on our campuses. Well, Cabot Phillips speaks for Campus Reform. He's interviewed often on Fox News. He went out recently, I think it was to George Washington University, to talk to some of the kids on campus about the recent shutdown and who they thought was to blame for this shutdown. So here was the first question. Who do you want to blame? Here's the first montage of students of who they think was behind the shutdown.
What's your thought on who's to blame for the shutdown?
The president.
I think specifically Trump. Since this has been the longest government shutdown, he is mainly responsible.
Personally, Trump.
I would definitely say Trump.
I would say mostly on Trump.
Maybe get the government working again, that would be good.
I would say Trump is to blame.
Okay.
Yeah, Trump is probably to blame.
There you have it. 100% Trump is to blame. So then Cabot Phillips, he informed them, hey, were you aware of the concessions that the president had made? Number one, that along with getting money for the wall, that he was giving the Democrats what they wanted with regards to DACA, the kids, extending them to stay in the country without a problem for another 3 years, et cetera, et cetera. So he talked to them about the other side of the story, the concessions that the Trump administration was was making to the Democrats in order to try to work a deal. So here's how they responded after learning about those concessions the president was
offering. And that the Democrats refused.
And that the Democrats turned down. Cut six.
If President Trump were to make some of the concessions that Democrats have been asking for, like protection for DACA Dreamers, $800 million for humanitarian aid, extra funding for judges to get some of the immigration cases moving. If he were to offer those three things, do you think the Democrats should consider compromising on their end?
Yes, they should.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that they should compromise.
I think that would be a good start.
They should allow some funding for the wall for now if Trump were to agree to some of their terms as well.
Getting the government working and getting those protections for like Dreamers, that's obviously super important. And if like a conceding like a small portion of that, of something that's probably not going to be done, it's like kind of a bittersweet kind of.
So yeah, there they have. And then he went on to talk to them a little bit about, well, Nancy Pelosi didn't agree to that compromise.
Right.
And again, they all said, well, she should have. But folks, this is just a demonstration, you know, and it goes to the point, okay, why did these kids immediately go to Trump? Trump's to blame. Because that's what they've been told, whether it's social media, mm-hmm. some of them talked about their professors. This is the narrative out there, that it was all Trump's fault. They weren't aware of the compromises. I wish Cabot Phillips had told them about the bill that was offered by the Republicans in the House to pay all these people while they were off the job.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the Democrats, 222 of them, turned that down. That wasn't reported. Mm-hmm. So the misinformation campaign against President Trump is out there. I mean, not everything he does is good, but at least get the accurate information out there to people and see what happens when they're told the truth. When they have all the facts, all of a sudden, their mind starts to change. Wait a minute. There's a balancing act here.
Right.
And compromise, you know, he's offering this compromise, but Nancy Pelosi turned it down.
Mm-hmm. Well, and part of the, obviously a great part of this problem is that I think the Media Research Center did a study of media coverage of President Trump and found that over 90% of the media coverage was negative against Donald Trump. Well, that's extraordinarily high. I think that was the highest number they've ever had in terms of negative coverage of a president. Frankly, I'm not sure how the president survives this kind of the intensity of the hatred from the left manifesting itself in official journalistic endeavors where people get their news and information. And then you add on top of that, as you said, Fred, the professors on a daily basis, for the most part, all liberal.
Yes.
You know, in most colleges and universities, especially in the humanities, it's not surprising, Walker, that this is the reaction you get from kids who don't even know that the compromises were offered. They don't even know what's happening news-wise, but their assumption is it's got to be Trump's fault.
It's really surprised me that the Democrats will not take President Trump up on his offer to negotiate. I mean, Democrats have been talking about how we need amnesty. President Obama actually gave a form of amnesty through DACA, which I think is illegal, but the courts have held it up to date. I just, you know, look, the country's trending left. I know conservatives got Trump elected, but across the country's trending left. You know, California and New York are long gone.
Right.
They're trying to turn Texas blue. They're putting millions and billions into Texas to turn it blue. So you would think that the Democrats would try to get amnesty for all of the illegal immigrants that they supposedly care for, but they won't even try that.
Right.
They won't even say, we'll give you $1 billion for the wall and we get full amnesty. They won't even try that. I think that's because they know long term the courts are going to give amnesty in some form or fashion, and they don't want to give Trump the wall.
Yeah, it's a waiting game for them.
Yep.
They get rid of Trump, they're going to get
they'll be in charge again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, folks, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, Sandy Rios will be joining us, and we'll be discussing more of what's in the news. 2 minutes, we'll be back.
Next time on Today's Issues, our guest will be Abraham Hamilton III.
The Son of God became the Son of Man so that the sons of men could become the sons of God. That is what Jesus came to accomplish on our behalf. And our salvation is not by works, but we are saved by grace.
We'll also have news headlines and analysis from American Family News reporters. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Who said this? Of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. Hello everyone, I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. I was quoting none other than George Washington, our first president and father of our country, who said specifically that religion and morality are indispensable supports for our government and our culture. We're going to be going to Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, the home of George Washington, in June and September. If you'd like more information on this, please go to spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com. We'll also be going to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. If you'd like to do both tours or one or the other, that's fine. For all the information, again, June and September, go to spiritualheritagetours.com. We'd love to have you during these 2019 tours.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Since 1971, Liberty University's values have been defined by a commitment to excellence and a biblical worldview. Their mission of training champions for Christ has remained the foundation of everything they do. It's that mission that propels Liberty students to excellence in the classroom and beyond. More than 550 programs of study from undergrad to doctoral degrees, effectively preparing students to enter a competitive job market. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. That's liberty.edu. The next battleground for LGBT activists appears to be private Christian schools. The Human Rights Campaign and the Trevor Project are among groups condemning Karen Pence for working at Emmanuel Christian School. The private K-8 school outside of Washington requires employees to affirm certain religious beliefs, including a statement that marriage is between one man and one woman. The mainstream media was quick to pounce, accusing the vice president's wife of working at an anti-gay school. But their coverage failed to mention the school also forbids premarital sex for heterosexuals. In other words, the school is not anti-gay, they're just following the teachings of the Bible. The second lady's staff fired back, accusing the media of attacking the school's religious beliefs. And it's true. Basically, gay rights groups do not want Christian schools to abide by Christian values. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back, folks. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman. He will be back in the captain's chair tomorrow. I'm joined in studio by Fred Jackson and Walker Wildman. Walker, if folks want to tune in and watch and see us in our sweaters and pullovers here in this cold morning, how would they go about watching us online?
Yeah, two ways to watch the show. You can either go to our Facebook page, Today's Issues on Facebook, or you can go to our YouTube channel. Just type in Today's Issues on YouTube. So both of those places, you can watch the live stream each weekday. And if you just want to listen to the audio, then you can visit our website, afr.net, or download the American Family Radio app, which is available on various tablet and smartphone devices.
All right. Thank you, Walker. Well, no stranger to American Family Radio and no stranger to Today's Issues, our next guest, I don't even know whether to call her a guest. She's just part of the family here, Sandy Rios. She's AFA Director of Governmental Affairs. She's host of Sandy Rios in the Morning, heard on American Family Radio Talk each weekday morning from 7:05 to 8 a.m. Central. Sandy, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Ed. How very kind of you. Yes, I am part of the family.
Yes, part of the family. That's right. We'll invite you to Sunday dinner, you know, and let
take you up on that.
You know, pasta and whatever's. Well, anyway. Fred, let's toss a couple of ideas or stories towards Sandy and get her take, because she's hesitant to share her opinion on some of these things, but let's try to drag it out of her anyway.
Yeah, I know. I want to find out Sandy's favorite Democrat candidate to be the next president of the United States. And here's one for you. Since Kamala Harris was out there Sunday. She Saturday or Sunday, she had a big deal in Oakland. 20,000 people show up for her official announcing that she's running for president. And then she ran. It was Des Moines, Iowa, I think, last night, where she was part of a town hall meeting with CNN's Jake Tapper. Now, everybody knows CNN is the unofficial public relations arm for the Democrats.
That's right. That's right.
Right. So we ought not to be surprised.
Clearly so.
Yeah. Anyway, Kamala Harris has joined with a few other of the Democrats in the Medicare for All campaign. And so Jake Tapper asked her the question last night, all right, Medicare for All, if people like their insurance, can they keep it? If you become the next president of the United States, what's going to happen with people who have insurance right now, private insurance? Cut number two.
Just to follow up on that, and correct me if I'm wrong, to reiterate, you support the Medicare for All bill, I think initially co-sponsored by Senator Bernie Sanders. You're also a co-sponsor on it. I believe it will totally eliminate private insurance. So for people out there who like their insurance, they don't get to keep it?
Well, listen, the idea is that everyone gets access to medical care. And you don't have to go through the process of going through an insurance company, having them give you approval, going through the paperwork, all of the delay that may require. Who of us has not had that situation where you got to wait for approval and the doctor says, well, I don't know if your insurance company is going to cover this? Let's eliminate all of that. Let's move on.
So there you have it.
So the answer is no, you can't.
Medicare for All. Free medical care. No problem with that.
Sandy, I'll say this for Kamala Harris. Now, Fred pronounces it Kamala, but he's from Canada. So we give him a little bit of leeway. You can pronounce it any way you'd like. But I have to say this about her. At least she's honest, whereas President Obama was not being honest when he said, oh, yeah, you want your doctor, you can keep your doctor. Same with your insurance.
Well, of course, that's a strategy, Ed. As you know, they have to let us down gently. President Obama was also against gay marriage and all about traditional marriage, and he was such a family guy. And, you know, slowly the mask came off, and certainly what he said about health care was a lie because we knew that he wanted single payer. That's been the goal all along for the left. That's the way you take over a society. You get very invasive into their lives, you know, all about their personal stuff. And you control whether they get what? How could you control people any more effectively than by controlling what kind of health care they get and if they get it at all? And so that's part of the march to the left. And we have, you know, the left has already lurched so far that now it's comfortable for Kamala to say something like that. But the reality is, you know, they've done studies of even what Bernie Sanders was proposing, and which is the same thing as what she's proposing.
Right.
A Medicare for All. Well, that sounds great. But then let's just see. Because healthcare companies and our whole medical system is falling apart as of the results of moving towards Obamacare. And because doctors are leaving the profession, we have a shortage of doctors. And because even now, a lot of doctors won't take Medicare patients.
Right.
What we're going to do is everyone, as under Obamacare, if she should get her way, would have a piece of paper or an email that says they have insurance, that they are covered for this and that and the other. But having a piece of paper that says you're covered is not the same thing as being able to pick up a phone and find a doctor and call a doctor and be able to get into a doctor and actually have a procedure. If everyone floods this public service, just imagine calling, you're really, really sick, or your baby, let's do it this way. Your baby's really sick, high fever, seizuring. You've been waiting all weekend for the switchboard to open up, and you call and you get, if you speak English, press one. If you speak Spanish, press, you're going to get all the languages. Then they're going to put you on hold, and then you're going to get someone who really doesn't care that your baby's sick and has a fever because they're in Malaysia. You know, I mean, I'm conjuring up this, but it's going to be like the DMV. It's going to be like Social Security. It will be a nightmare for the most personal thing in your life, your children's health, your health, and it will be a nightmare, and it will bankrupt the country. Mm-hmm. So.
And socialized medicine. This is not something brand new. It's been tried. It's in practice in places like Canada. And I've talked to you guys before. You know, when my dad, when he was alive, he was waiting for for an operation on his eyes. And down here, you know, cataract surgery, you can pretty well get it next week. He had to wait 6 months because it's not a priority if you're over 60 years of age. Likewise, you know, knee replacements and those kinds of things regarded as non-critical, you're on a list. And we'll get to you when we can. This is the other side of this story. And again, we were just dealing with the misinformation campaign that our kids on university campuses, Sandy, before you came on, campus reform has been out there talking about that. This is what people are not being told about Medicare for all.
Right.
Your service level will go down because the government will start prioritizing where the money's spent.
Like we're animals. Like yes. We're machines. We're gonna service young machines.
Yes.
Because we're gonna get more tax money out of them in the years to come. But if you're an older machine, then you'll just have to wait in the back.
Yeah.
Before you get serviced. I mean, it's a very inhumane way to look at things.
And absolutely. Walker, actually, to illustrate your point, you probably remember that when Barack Obama was running for president, he was holding a town hall. And a woman stood up and she had her mother next to her. And she said, I want to ask you, sir, about my mother. She was, you know, obviously a supporter of his. My mother is 92 or whatever, something like that. But she started having trouble with her heart. And she's so vibrant. She's so active, her mind. And she's still, you know, doing this and that. And so we found out that if she could get a pacemaker, it could, you know, it could improve the quality of her life. And so she got one and it's been great. But under your medical plan, under this great plan you're proposing, you know, what would happen to someone like my mother? And his answer was, well, you know, she could take drugs or, you know, something like that just might not be available, you know, a pacemaker to someone like your mother. She'd just maybe have to take drugs or some other. And he kind of laughed it off and he smiled. But he said it very, very clearly.
Mm-hmm.
Very clearly. It was a very unguarded moment for him, probably not too. He probably wishes he hadn't said it. But it's true that older people will be neglected. And I would also say to all of you, because of we're having such a crisis in terms of immigration and the influx of illegal immigrants, they're also going to be sharing our healthcare system.
Right.
And there is a limit to what it can bear. If anyone's been to an emergency room at a hospital lately, or in the last 15 years, I'd say, you will see that many illegal immigrants, because they can't be turned away, go to modern hospitals for their health care.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes you can't even get in to see.
Because you don't have to pay, Sandy. I mean, you can,
exactly.
You can walk into virtually any hospital, any emergency room. People go in with a cold. They've
That's
got a
right.
stuffy nose. They go clog up the emergency room because they don't have to pay for it. And yep.
Hey, no. Listen, we don't have you for too much longer, Sandy. Let me switch gears real quick. This is an awkward transition here, but we are talking about healthcare and Kamala Carmella. Let me ask you about, we're talking about this plan to abolish private insurance. Somebody else is getting a lot of publicity here, and that's Howard Schultz, who slammed Kamala Harris's plan to abolish private insurance. Now, he's the former CEO of Starbucks. Is he the founder, Fred, of Starbucks?
I know he's the former CEO.
CEO. Yeah. Now, he is threatening, and I think he is planning to run as an independent. Would he? And now Democrats are screaming like crazy. Kamala Harris is not the only Democrat, obviously, running. Even Marianne Williamson, the New Age author and, you know, quote unquote, spiritual teacher, she's thrown her hat into the ring. You got all these Democrats queuing up, and then Howard Schultz comes out and maybe threatens that by the possibility of siphoning away votes in 2020 and reelecting Donald Trump. What do you think of this guy? We have just a couple more minutes. I wanted to get that question in, even though it's awkward. Switching gears here.
Well, you know, I'm not an expert on Howard Schultz. I mean, this is all new to me, too. But this much I know. We all know that Starbucks has taken a very political stand, including abortion. They put these slogans on their coffee cups. I'm not a Starbucks customer, to be honest with you.
Right.
But I know that they have swerved to the left and been very bold in their commitment to leftist politics, and that's under his leadership. And so we can only guess then what that would mean to his policies. But it's a real threat to the Democrats. I mean, for obvious reasons, because here he is pro-business, you know, and he's got some common sense about this nonsense of Medicare for all. So that's good. But on these other issues, he will be a real problem for conservatives. In fact, you know, many of us have been trying to get people not to go to Starbucks for that very reason, just right. Like AFA has a target of boycott of Target. I think Starbucks is a real problem, and he's been the leader. So what that means to us, it means that the Democrats might not win the 2020 election if he's serious about this.
Well, the reason I wanted to ask you this is because a lot of our listeners remember the 92 election where incumbent George H.W. Bush ran against, well, it was challenged by the up-and-coming then former governor of Arkansas, Bill Clinton. And Ross Perot ran a third-party independent candidacy and won almost 19% of the vote, electing Bill Clinton with just 43%. I think George Bush was 37%. So it was basically understood by historians that Ross Perot cost H.W. Bush, Bush 41, re-election. And it's strange that that kind of a run by someone like Howard Schultz could do the same thing, splitting the Democratic vote and getting a lot of independents, people who don't want to go the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez 70% income tax, don't want to go Kamala Harris, you know, abolishing private insurance, but they don't like Donald Trump. That could reelect the president.
Yeah, it could. And I mean, really, there's so many scenarios there. I do know that he was a supporter of Hillary Clinton.
Yes.
In the last election.
Well, he claimed to be Democrat. He just said, I just can't go this far left in terms of economic policy.
Yeah. I mean, he might even do a surprise upset. You think about it. Because there are a lot of people, because of the hatred of Donald Trump and the mantra that he's a horrible, no good, you know, piece of, you know, slime, I guess I'll call it that. And people believe that because they don't pay attention.
Yeah.
And the fact that there's probably a lot of Democratic dissatisfaction with how far left the party's going. So he could pull off an upset.
Yeah.
He could.
Well, it's a strange, and we're going to let you go here, Sandy. It's a strange 2020 election that we're looking at. I mean, it's just this next couple of years is just going to be bizarre. You got a president under siege, the Mueller investigation. I mean, it's crazy. We're entering into unprecedented times. And the very thought that Howard Schultz is, I know next to nothing about him. I'm trying to catch up and read. Who knows? But the very fact that we're contemplating the possibility of the first third party win in modern American history, I'm not sure it's ever happened. We've been a fairly two-party system. I mean, that just shows you that these are uncharted waters and nobody really knows what's going to happen. So
it's a truth. I mean, you know, honestly, to imagine this further, you could imagine it doing tons of damage to the Democratic and Republican Party structures.
Right.
Which, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a good thing. We'll see what Howard Schultz says, you know, how he campaigns if he decides to run. But I think based on what I know about him, it would be really tough.
Oh, no, he would be a social liberal. I mean, cultural liberal, I'm sure. We were talking before the show that, on the other hand, Republicans don't even talk about fiscal matters anymore. He's talking about the debt and the danger that the debt poses. You don't even hear Republicans talking about that anymore. Both parties are basically thrown in the towel. Democrats never intended to be fiscally responsible. We expected Republicans
to.
They
acted like it.
They acted like it, but they've thrown in the towel too, so... anyway, I just wanted to get your take on it. It's fascinating times we live in.
Yeah.
Christians, if you're not praying, what are you thinking? We desperately need prayer for this country. So anyway, Sandy, thank you so much for being with us again. Again, folks, Sandy Rios in the Morning, heard on AFR Talk every weekday morning from 7:05 to 8 a.m. Central Time. Thanks, Sandy.
Thank you. Talk to you guys soon.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, a little bit of whiplash there. I wanted to get her take on Howard Schultz. What do you guys think about that. It's out of nowhere. We're still a long way off. He could quickly burn out. This would be some revelation that this or that. Who knows? But the fact that Democrats are so terrified and so angry at him because he's running as an independent, to me, means he may have some staying power.
If he could stay out of the social issues, which is hard to do because that's what fuels a lot of the base. But if you could stay out of the social issues, focus on economics, just economics, you could win. You could pull in Dems and independents and some Republicans who don't like Trump.
Yeah.
I just think it's humorous that the Democrats are freaking out because someone dares run a campaign as an independent instead of a Democrat.
Fred, I tell you what, it would be hilarious to me that Democrats who initiated 8 years of Bill Clinton leading to Hillary Clinton's run, and she hasn't even said no to 2020. No. All that started because of Ross Perot, an independent candidate in 1992, basically splitting the vote away from George H.W. Bush, giving Bill Clinton the nomination. The reverse could happen where Donald Trump gets reelected because a Democrat decides to run as an independent.
I think, obviously, we want to listen a whole lot more to what Howard Schultz has to say. But I think because of his business background, he's a little bit more, down to earth, realistic when it comes to the economy of this country. Unlike the Kamala Harris and Ocasio-Cortez, free education, free medical care for everybody. He's a businessman. He understands that he had to purchase things for his stores.
Right.
And in order to afford that and pay his employees, he had to have a certain cost for those products. So he understands the basics of business. And he understands that if we keep driving ourselves further and further into debt as a country, we are in deep trouble and we're not going to be able to turn it around.
Yeah.
So he's a fiscal conservative. He doesn't find any other Democrat candidate right now that he could endorse because they're off the rails fiscally.
And he said he couldn't run as a Democrat because he'd have to say things he doesn't believe in.
Republican. Yeah. He couldn't run as a Republican.
And that's one thing that President Trump has gotten wrong is the fiscal issue.
Yeah.
President Trump hasn't spoken. He may have spoken during the campaign about how we're spending too much money, but he's been signing these budget bills that are horrible, spending trillions of dollars, and who knows where it all goes. But Trump has ignored that issue, and that's going to hurt him. If Schultz seems credible on fiscal responsibility and Trump's nowhere to be found on it, that's going to hurt President Trump.
Part of the problem is the way Washington works. You know, he signed that bill back there, I guess it was last year, which included a pay raise for the military. And things don't work in Washington the way they do in the business world and the real world, because that was a bill. He wanted to give the military a pay raise. That was one of his election issues.
Right.
But it gets lumped in with all this
other
stuff.
He had to bribe the Democrats.
Right.
You know, so he had to come to that compromise. He's not used to that kind of stuff. But he really feels strongly, I believe, from his heart about our military personnel. They deserved a pay raise. They hadn't had one for a long, long time. So he made that compromise for their sake. And I think rightly so in this case. They did deserve a pay raise. But Washington is messed up. You've got these huge bills. The president, I'm sure, looked down that list and said, we don't need this, we don't need that, we don't need that. But we do need this. And I want to make sure our military gets a pay raise.
Yeah, the days when President Trump has to bribe the Democrats with money, government money, taxpayer money, to get a pay raise for the military, that's a sad day.
It is.
That
it
should
is.
Be something that everybody agrees on. But the Democrats wouldn't do it unless Trump gave them billions in wasteful spending for their domestic product.
Well, like Fred said, Washington's broken.
Yeah.
And Republicans bear an equal amount of blame here because since George Bush was not a fiscal conservative either. And basically, my opinion is George Bush, in a very kind of crafty way, again, I don't mean that in a negative way, he just was shrewd. He saw how Bill Clinton got elected, which was promising to spend money on this program and that program. And so when George Bush now 43, George Bush 43, when he was running, he began promising all kinds of stuff for education, right, and for health care, because he saw that the way to get elected is to promise money. Mm-hmm. And that's what he did for 8 years. And Republicans basically abandoned fiscal conservatism. And you know why? Because when people on the left are promising free stuff, and you're the grown-up in the room,
right,
saying, listen, we can't pay for that, you look like a scold. You right. look like the stick in the mud. You and who's going to vote for someone who's saying, listen, we got to show some restraint here.
Yeah.
That's not America in the 2000s. And you get this guy, Howard Schultz. Now, I don't think he would necessarily be a good president. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying he comes talking fiscal conservatism and fiscal restraint and balancing budget, whatever he's going to wind up saying. There may be a fair number of people who go, okay, let's take a look at that. So it's very interesting times. I have no idea whether he's going to get much traction, but he could. He could be a threat to President Trump's reelection chances, but he could also undercut the Democrats. You know, he said that all these promises, he was talking about Kamala Harris, all these promises for free this, free college, free, you know, all this, he said it would cost over 10 years $40 trillion. And then he made the point, he was on a talk show, an interview, he made the point, he says, we're already $22 trillion in debt, and that's not even talking about our unfunded liabilities, which is close to $60
trillion. Yeah.
And so now you're talking possible bankruptcy of the insolvency, and if, in fact, I think that's what he said, if this was a business, we'd be insolvent.
Yeah.
So anyway, this is a discussion we hadn't heard in a while.
No,
and he's going to capture some attention.
Well, he also
captured mine.
He also took an exception to Ocasio-Cortez, who has said tax the billionaires 70%.
70%.
And it's really interesting. He was talking like a Republican in his response, and he said, you know, he grew up a poor guy,
right,
you know, on the other side of the tracks, and he said, This is what he said. I lived the American dream. And then he explained, he said, I worked hard.
Right.
And I made my way to the top. He understands that if you take away the incentive, that if I work hard, I can succeed, I can build a business, I can do that in America. If you take that away, what are you left with?
Right.
You're left with Venezuela.
Right.
That's what you're left with, because there's no incentive.
Well, you know, Ocasio-Cortez said there shouldn't even be any billionaires, didn't he? Didn't she?
Yes.
They shouldn't even exist.
Yeah. Can you imagine?
It's insane.
So if you're a billionaire out there and you normally contribute to a Democrat candidate, seriously, are you going to give to this woman who really doesn't have a clue about how the real world works? She doesn't. I mean, and don't put her on a fiscal committee or finance committee. Can you imagine for a moment? So I think what Schultz is seeing, there's some room in there between the Republicans and the Democrats for somebody that perhaps can appeal to the common sense side of people when it comes to fiscal matters. But he also brings to the table that kind of social liberalism.
Right.
I think he sees himself as bringing two parties together. I don't know.
Well, and I'll tell you, that is going to be an appealing message for those who, you know, for example, amongst Democrats, Ocasio-Cortez in New Hampshire polls higher than Hillary Clinton. I mean, she's a rock star, but that's not the majority of Americans.
No.
And for people who are tired of the rancor and the hostility between the two wings, you get somebody who comes in the middle, like Walker's saying, who's talking fiscal conservative. Listen, I've built a business. I'm not going to be flying off the handle like Donald Trump. He's a calm guy. And then he says, listen, I will work and try to bring the country together.
Yeah.
That's an appealing message.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's got some running room here in between the two parties. So, again, this is not an endorsement, folks. I'm just talking about the fact that 2020 is looking like, if you're interested in politics and history, this is going to be a feast for the eyes. All right, 5 minute break. We'll be back with more of today's issues.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.